It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Lift off.
Start on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner, PJ Tucker. Gordon by Gordon Ridge.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Now, as always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can catch me on Twitter, at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. And if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, drop us a review if you've got the time, maybe leave some stars. Above all else, share the podcast on all your different social media platforms. Tell a friend about it. Tell your dad, tell your mom, tell whoever about the podcast. I would appreciate it. Now, today's episode, we will continue our conversation with former Rocket and current Rockets broadcaster, Matt Bullard. So transitioning into kind of more modern NBA, you know, with the NBA season kind of preparing for this much anticipated return, you know, which storylines, Rockets or otherwise, are you excited to see continue?
Well, I think for sure, before all this happened and before the season got shut down, I was excited about the Rockets small ball experiment. You know, Mike D'Antoni and I have gotten to become really good friends, and we talk all the time. And Mike told me when he was coaching the Phoenix Suns back in like 04, 05, 06, he felt like he was doing the right thing by spreading the floor, playing faster with Steve Nash, shooting more threes. He felt like he was doing the right thing, but he didn't have the numbers to back it up. And so he wasn't 100% sure that he was doing the right thing. But now with the Rockets and with the front office that the Rockets have and all the number crunchers that they have, Mike now knows for sure that what he's doing numerically is the right thing to do. That Mike is creating the most efficient shots that have the highest points per shot, and he's getting the most of them as open as possible. So he knows just by the stats that he's doing the right thing. So now he's all in. And the fact that the Rockets went small to be able to create more room for Russ and James to drive to the rim and also create more open threes, that's what I was excited about, to see if Mike could finally break through and win a championship with his style. And then the pandemic hits and it shuts it all down. And that's kind of bummed me out, because I feel like the Rockets have a chance to win it all this year and do it in a very modern way that shows the rest of the league this is how basketball should be played. And so that's what I'm excited about, is hopefully the Rockets can come back and pick up where they left off on their small ball experiment, that Russ and James can have tremendous playoffs and carry the Rockets to a championship and do it the way that Mike D'Antoni wants to do it. And I'm very excited to see, you know, skinny James. James has done a really good job with this time off of sort of remaking his body and slimming down a little bit and not having to carry so much weight. So maybe he won't get as tired. And of course, we've seen, you know, Russ has been working out like a madman, and of course, you wouldn't expect anything different from him. So I'm super excited to see those two superstars be able to come back and have a chance to finish this season off.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to adopt this phrasing, but I've taken to calling skinny James Slim Jim. So I think that's definitely something. If you want to take it back to the broadcast team, I won't be upset. But
I have seen that, and I think that's very clever. But I think I'm going to run it by him first before I use it.
So that's fair.
I see him, I'm going to ask him and see what he does.
All right, you got to bring the word back to me and tell me what he thinks about it. But I want to ask, can you think of another time that a player has undergone this drastic of a physical transformation this late into their career? Because the word on the street is that he's dropped like close to 20 pounds.
I have seen a lot of it. It happens all the time. It's every NBA player who plays a long time realizes about year 10, they realize, you know what, I got to carry less weight. If I'm going to play this game as long as my body can hold out, the less weight that I'm carrying around, the easier it's going to be on my body, on my knees, on my ankles, on my hips. I remember Otis Thorpe doing the same thing. When I first came to the Rockets in 1990, Otis Thorpe was a massive super strong dude. And he played for like 16 years. And as he got further on in his career after he left the Rockets, he slimmed down. Now, he didn't lose any strength. He just slimmed down so that he can continue to play, 15, 16 years. And so it's really smart what James has done to use this time to lose some weight so that his longevity will be much less injury ridden, and he'll feel better for it.
One area that James Harden probably deserves a bit more credit than he gets as an NBA superstar is the fact that he is, basically a certifiable Iron Man. You know, he doesn't miss a lot of game time. And I think that when you've got so many other stars that are out there load managing or they are injury prone or things of that nature, you know, you look at James and you're just like, yeah, you can count on him to be there night in and night out. Now, with that, though, I guess – how do we expect this? Is his game going to change because of this? Do we expect him to maybe, be more explosive or drive more? How are you expecting this to impact his game on the court? How's it going to translate?
Yeah, I think it'll make it, he'll definitely be quicker, and he's already able to get by anybody in the NBA. You can't guard him one-on-one. He can get by anybody. And he uses his strength when he gets into the paint, for sure, to create space for him to get his shots off. But I think his strength will still be – he'll still be just as strong, but with less weight, he'll be quicker. His first step will be even quicker. He'll be even harder to guard now. And so I'm excited about that, to see how he's able to do that. And the other – the other part of James's game that's, I guess you would say on the cutting edge is his step back three. Now, I remember watching the Dream with the Dream Shake. In the post, he would – fade to the middle and then turn baseline and fade away and hit that Dream Shake shot. And that Dream Shake shot was unguardable. You couldn't guard it with one guy. And then you go all the way back to a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. The skyhook was unguardable. And James Harden has the same kind of shot now. He has the step back three that's unguardable. And so the domination that James is able to have on the offensive end is historic, what he's doing. So, when I watch James play, I feel like I'm watching the modern day Wilt Chamberlain. Like, James doesn't have the 7'2" size like Wilt Chamberlain had, but James is still just as dominant on the offensive end, and it's fun to watch.
Absolutely. No, I saw a graphic the other day, like the fastest players to hit 1,000 points in a season, and it's right there: James Harden, Wilt Chamberlain. Anytime your name is consistently mentioned with the likes of Wilt or Michael Jordan, you're doing something right. And speaking of that, I do want to kind of ask you a question about James Harden's offensive repertoire coming up here in just 1 second after a quick word from our friends over at Rock Auto. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Is that fair? I don't think so. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and they are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require a membership or account login. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The Rock Auto catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Matt Bullard. So, Matt, there's been quite a bit of dismay across the Rockets fandom at times because of James' reluctance to utilize the mid-range at certain points in a game. And I myself am a culprit of, doing this at times. So, my thing is, seeing other stars be dominant from that area, Kawhi comes to mind, Kevin Durant when he's healthy. Is there a valid argument that situationally the mid-range could and should be used by James Harden?
Well, so let's look at the numbers. And I'm going to use some Michael Jordan stats. We were watching The Last Dance. It was just full of mid-range twos that Michael Jordan was taking. And Michael Jordan led the league in the mid-90s in mid-range two-point percentage. Well, every time he would shoot mid-range two, he was shooting 45% on those. So if you get 2 points for those mid-range twos, that's 0.9 points per shot. And so if we just take a look at James Harden driving in for the layups, James Harden shooting 65% on layups, that's a 1.3 points per shot. Or James Harden step back three, he shoots 40% on that and get 3 points for a three-point shot. So that's 1.2 points per shot. So to me, James taking shots that are giving you more than 1 point per shot is way better than Michael Jordan's 0.9 points per shot. Now, all of that being said, there are times towards the end of a game, a couple minutes left or less, and you need a high percentage shot. You know, you don't want to take a three that's a 40% shot. You just need points. And if you can't get all the way to the rim, which is the best shot in the league, then at that point, then yes, that's when the mid-range twos are going to be a better way to get points on the board than maybe settling for the three. But throughout an entire game, if you're Michael Jordan and you take 100 mid-range jumpers, you're going to score 90 points in the game. And if James Harden takes 100 threes, he's going to score 120. So James would beat Michael Jordan by 30 points in a single game just by taking more efficient shots. And that's exactly what Mike D'Antoni is doing with his offense, is taking the better, more efficient shots. And so when you see James and Russ and, you know, Chris Paul was the same way. Chris Paul's a terrific mid-range two-point shooter, but those mid-range twos, even though you're the best in the league at them, they're still not as good as the layup or the three.
Yeah, because you still have to convert it to even get up to 1 point per possession. You have to get up to that 50% threshold. And, you know, a couple of those guys that I mentioned, Kawhi, KD, I don't know their percentages, unfortunately, off the top of my head, but a guy like Chris Paul, who did play for the Rockets for a couple of years, you know, he has that in his repertoire and has shot above 50% from the mid-range, you know, consistently. James is a guy that's never really made it to that threshold. I think his best mid-range shooting season, he was hovering around 44%, I want to say, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Do you think that if it was something that he was to put into his repertoire a little bit more, do you think he could get to that 50% threshold, though, and make it a little bit more of a valuable shot from the analytics standpoint?
Well, the one thing about the mid-range shots is they're more heavily guarded. You know, the defense is always going to protect the rim first and then build their defense out. And so those mid-range jumpers, a lot of times, are very heavily guarded. Now, with the way James is playing, other teams have realized that they can't let him shoot the three and they can't let him get all the way to the rim. So a lot of teams now, their defenses have been set to have a big guy at the rim to take the layup away. And then the on-ball defender will guard James on his left side very heavily so that he can't shoot the step back three, and sort of inviting James to shoot a mid-range jumper. And so that's what they're trying to force him to take. But we've seen James now adjust his game, and he's got that little floater in the paint. So he can get into the paint and shoot the little floater over the big man. And James's floater percentage is way better than his mid-range two percentage. And so he's been able to find a way to still get effective shots, even though other teams are trying to force him to take the mid-range two.
I'm glad you brought up the floater, Matt, because, and this is just purely eye test. I don't have any numbers to back me up on this, but it seems like he's using the floater or has used it quite a bit less since the, you know, full commitment to small ball. Now, is that because there's not as much pick and roll action being run as much, or do you agree with me on that he's using the floater less since committing to small ball?
Yeah, what you've seen is exactly right. And the reason why he's using the floater less is because now with small ball, there is no big man in the paint. The big man is PJ Tucker, and he's in the corner waiting for a wide open three. So, you know, a guy like Rudy Gobert, when the Rockets played the Utah Jazz, Rudy Gobert is the best rim protector in the league. But if he's got to guard the corner three, then he's not going to be at the rim. So James can get all the way to the rim for a layup, or Russ can get all the way to the rim for a layup. So the floater isn't as an important shot. Now, just in that example, let's say if James is driving in trying to get a layup, and Rudy Gobert comes over and blocks off the rim, well, then James knows that PJ has got a wide open three. And James is a very willing passer, so James doesn't have to rely on the floater as much when he has so many shooters around him.
With this Rockets small ball experiment that, you know, they've gone all in on, we've seen some pretty big highs, you know, beating the Lakers with, you know, in Robert Covington's first game with the team, the 6-game winning streak that had wins, you know, back to back or two wins over the Boston Celtics. And we've also seen, unfortunately, some lows, the dropping 4 games just before this COVID-19 hiatus took place. Do you think there's still room to improve the small ball scheme, or do you think we've kind of seen both the highs and the lows already?
No, I think, you know, the 4-game skid started in New York City. And I think that was those 4 losses where the Rockets just didn't look themselves. That was, those to me are like schedule losses. The Rockets were kind of hitting the part of the season where they were running out of gas. They needed, they played 4 games in a row where they looked very lackluster. It wasn't because of the offense or the schemes. It was just the effort level. And in an 82-game season, you're going to have a stretch or two where you're not going to be playing your best ball. So I'm not too worried about the little skid that the Rockets had. And with all of this time off now, every team is going to be rested and won't have any excuse for being tired or whatever. But I think the Rockets, I think they have enough confidence to know when they come back, the small ball stuff is going to work. And like you say, some of the big wins that they've had with the small ball lineup is going to give them confidence.
Coming up, I do want to ask Matt his thoughts on the potential playoff return to play formats that are kind of rumored out there, as well as a question about one Russell Westbrook. So we'll get to that in just 1 second after a quick word from our friends over at Built Bars. You know, I've basically given up on ever having a body that looks exactly like Russell Westbrook or, you know, even the new and trim Slim Jim James Harden, but I haven't given up on my body completely, right? And that's why I choose Built Bars. Built Bars allow me the chance to catch up on my protein. Because look, I'm a big guy. I'm 6'1". I need a lot of protein to be able to hit any type of a workout goal that I set for myself. And Built Bars helps me do that. Look, the bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. And here's the best part. They taste great. They're soft and easy to chew. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They've got 16 amazing different flavors to choose from. It's a protein bar that basically tastes just like a candy bar. Honestly, my personal favorite, the double chocolate mousse, you cannot go wrong with it. And you can try it out if you want to. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your first order. Remember, you can take part in this. You can try them out and see for yourself. See if I'm BSing you or not, because I don't think I am. Again, I wouldn't be ranting and raving about these bars if they weren't actually really good. So you can go to use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So, Matt, the first question that I have is about Russell Westbrook. And I think during this hiatus, it's been kind of nice because there have been a couple moments where Rockets players, specifically, you know, the two that come to mind, Austin Rivers really early on during the hiatus and Robert Covington recently, you know, both came out and said, you know, something to the effect of that Russ is the best teammate that they've ever had. And even former teammates of Russ have said this as well. But yet there's still this negative stigma, negative perception that Russ is somehow a bad teammate. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm gonna run it back to the 90s when I was teammates with Vernon Maxwell. You know, Vernon Maxwell, to me, was one of my favorite teammates, one of the best teammates I ever had. But you talk to anybody who played against Mad Max, and they hated him, you know. And Russell Westbrook's the same type of guy where he is so competitive. He never takes a playoff. He never takes a game off. You know, when you're playing against Russ, you're going to have to bring everything you've got for the full 48. And so players don't like that. They don't really like having to compete against somebody who does not quit. And so you sort of get a reputation like that for, you know, Russ has sort of a reputation, but you talk to his teammates and they love him because you love playing with a guy who brings it all the time. And so that's what the Rockets are finding out is the perception of Russ when he was with OKC doesn't really match up with who he really is. And I also think that Russ realizes that, you know, he was with OKC his whole career. And so coming to Houston gives him a chance to kind of reset who he is or reset his public persona. He can sort of take a different tack and build a new identity. And I think he's doing that. He's done a terrific job of integrating himself into the Houston Rockets organization. He's done a terrific job of being a good teammate, being a good citizen around Houston. He's done a lot of great stuff during the pandemic, helping people out. And so it's one of those things, you know, as Rockets fans, we hated Russ when he was with OKC. But now that he's on our team, we love him. And that's, you know, the same type of deal with Vernon Maxwell, same type of deal with a lot of players. Chris Paul was the same way. Remember, we used to hate Chris Paul when he was with the LA Clippers. He came to Houston. We all fell in love with him. So it is kind of cool to see that Rockets fans have embraced Russ and made him one of our own.
You know, and then there's the flip side of that. We have Patrick Beverley, who's no longer a Houston Rocket. And, you know, we loved Bev while he was here, and now he's gone. And it's just, you see the Clippers on the calendar, you're like, oh, got to deal with Beverley, you know, for a full 48. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, Rockets fans, you know, having hated Russ in the past, because recently with Adam Clanton, I did the Villains podcast, and Russ was included in there. I had to include him because he was a Rockets villain for quite some time. Now, I want to know, what is Russ the person like? You know, because we see him on the basketball court, but you're able to interact with him when he's not on the court, when that intensity isn't dialed up to 11. What is he like?
Yeah, he's a good dude. You know, like he's got a smile on his face. Whenever I talk to him, he's, you know, we always have great conversations. He's very easy to talk to, very easy to, you know, to get along with. You know, I ride the airplane with the team and stay in the hotels, and he's just a good dude. He's a good leader. He leads by example, a lot like Akeem used to do. You know, there's not a lot of BS in his life. You know, he's a pretty straight shooter, and he's just a good dude. You know, I'm really glad that I've gotten a chance to know him a little bit because, you know, like we were talking about, when you don't really know a player and they're on other teams, you sort of get that perception. But getting to know Russ, he's a good dude, and we're lucky to have him on our team.
So of these potential return to play playoff formats, like the suggested taking just the top 16 teams, regardless of conference, or potentially adopting some type of a group stage format, which is the most intriguing to you and why?
Well, you know, it's so complicated. There's so many things that go into this decision. And one of the things from my particular perspective, working for AT&T Sportsnet, is the contract that AT&T Sportsnet has with the Rockets says that we have to get at least 70 games a year in order for us to pay the entire rights fees to the Rockets. And every other team in the NBA has the same sort of deal with their regional sports network. So there will need to be some games played that the regional sports networks can cover to make those contracts whole, because the owners definitely want to get as much revenue as they can. And so they definitely need the full revenue from their regional sports networks. So that's one angle on this, that, you know, if we just went straight to the playoffs with 16 teams, then there aren't going to be enough games to satisfy those contracts for teams around the league. Or, you know, if we bring in, let's say, 22 teams, and we allow the teams that are sort of on the bubble to maybe have a chance to play their way into the playoffs, then 22 teams might have a chance to reach that 70-game threshold for their regional sports networks. But the eight teams that don't get invited, you know, they're going to lose out on revenue. So not only is this a decision about how many games should we play, should we go straight to the playoffs, how much time do the players need to get ready, do they need some regular season games to sort of knock the rust off, but also, hey, the owners want revenue, the players want their paychecks to be as whole as possible, and the guys that I work with on the TV side, you know, the guys that work in the production truck, they're not getting paid right now. And so they're all pretty frantic, you know, trying to survive this pandemic with no paycheck coming in. So there's a lot of things to think about when we're trying to figure out how many games are we going to play, how much time do we have, how safe is it going to be, you know? So that's the reason why I'm glad that Adam Silver is in charge and making these decisions, because he's going to make the right one. He's going to make the smartest decision. And I have a lot of confidence that he's going to lead us in the right direction.
So does that mean if to be able to satisfy the local area contracts, does that mean if, say, there are some regular season games to be played, even if they're in, say, a bubble site, you know, at Disney World or Las Vegas or something to that effect, does that mean we might still get a few more broadcast games between you and Craig?
Yes. I think that's the whole plan, is there will be one camera crew at the bubble site, shooting the game. And then all of that video and all of that audio will come back to the studio here in Houston. And everybody who works in the production truck will be in the studio in Houston. I'll be there. Craig will be there. Bill will be there, whoever's calling the games. And we'll do the same broadcast that we normally do, except we will be doing it remotely. And the technology exists to be able to do that. We actually have called games before remotely when the Rockets went over to China for preseason games. We've already done this. And the, you know, the game actually looks really good. You don't realize that we're not there. And so we're going to be able to give the fans their home broadcast with their home broadcasters for their home team. And, you know, like I say, I don't know how many we're going to get, but let's hope that we get a lot of them so that the Rockets can get their full payment and the guys I work with can be made whole with their jobs as well.
Absolutely. And continuing on with that broadcast kind of topic, I do want to know, just to wrap things up, was broadcasting always the plan after your playing career?
Well, so at the end of my last 4 years of my playing career in the late 90s, I started to I'll even go back. So when I first started playing, I was super excited. I made it to the NBA. I'm an NBA player. I'm so excited. I'm playing against Larry Bird. I'm playing against Magic Johnson, you know. And then you get into the middle of your career, you know, years like 5, 6, 7, you sort of get jaded. You get a little worn out. You're like, man, I gotta do this. I gotta do that. You know, you get a little tired of that. And then you realize after about year 8, you realize, hey, you know what? This ain't gonna last forever. And it really is a good, it really is a cool job. And so when I made it to that part of my career, I realized, you know, this is not going to last forever. What am I going to do afterwards? And so I started, I talked with Joel Blank, who was the director of broadcasting at the time with the Rockets. And he hooked me up doing Houston Comets radio in the summertime. So I was able to get some experience and some practice calling games for the great Houston Comets, who were 4-time back-to-back-to-back-to-back champions. So I got to experience that. I got to see the great Cheryl Swoops and Cynthia Cooper and Tina Thompson and Kim Perrott and all those great players for the Comets. I was calling those games, getting experience so that when I did retire, I was able to step right into it. So it wasn't really my plan when I was growing up to get into this, but it was sort of my plan at the end of my playing career to transition into this so that I could continue to work in basketball.
Okay. And what has been your favorite play call to date that you've been a part of? And because, you know, as you mentioned, the Comets, feel free to include them. If it's not a Rockets play call, I won't be upset.
Yeah. There's been so many great ones, you know, like, and you know, in all the Rockets games that I've played in, like one of the all time great calls is Bill Worrell when he had Akeem Olajuwon bamboozling David Robinson, you know,
yep.
He bamboozled, you know, that's one of the great ones of all time. Craig's call when James Harden dropped Wesley Johnson, clean up on aisle 3. You know,
iconic.
You know, there's been so many great ones, and you know, Bill is a legendary broadcaster here in Houston, and he's still, you know, so good and on top of his game. And Craig is so good too. So the fact that I get to work with those two great play-by-play guys, it's like great calls night after night.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to be here with us, Matt. At the end of the podcast, I usually let, you know, my guests plug, you know, anything that they want at the very end. It's pretty easy to find you, though. I mean, you're pretty popular, but is there anything you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Well, you know, there's nothing I want to plug. I just want to tell everybody, hey, unity is very important. You know, we're the United States of America, and we all need to come together. There's a lot of things in our society that are wrong, that are bad, that need fixing. And the only way we're going to do it is if we all pull together and unite. And so I just want to encourage everybody to join in with their favorite NBA players and their NBA teams and follow what the NBA is doing here, leading in our society, because there's a lot of things that need to be fixed, and it's going to take everybody to do it.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you again, Matt, for taking the time to be here with us today.
All right. Thank you.
And that is going to do it. I hope you enjoyed our chat with Matt Bullard. If you enjoyed the chat, be sure to subscribe to Locked On Rockets on iTunes and Spotify. Drop us a review if you have the time. I would sincerely appreciate it. But for today's episode, that's where we will cut things off. As always, thank you all so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.